Hit a home run and get pre-approved for your next refinance or home purchase at thehomeloanexpert.com. Enjoy the podcast.
This is Cardinals broadcaster and Schnucks shopper Dan McLaughlin. Schnucks would like everyone to know how much they appreciate our community during this very difficult time. They know this isn't easy for everyone, and that's why Schnucks is working around the clock to make sure they handle the needs of our community. Schnucks wants to say thank you for your support, your patience, and your never quit attitude, as we will all get through this together. Schnucks appreciates our community, and they want all of their shoppers to know how much they mean to them.
Brian Walton of thecardinalnation.com is with us every Wednesday on Scoops with DannyMac.com, and the owners have agreed upon a proposal to be presented to the players in the Players Association. The plan proposes a 50-50 revenue split with the players, 82-game regular season, 14 playoff teams, use of home stadiums, universal DH, geographical schedules, 30-man roster, upward of 50 players potentially available. Brian Walton of thecardinalnation.com, we thank every Wednesday. What are we going to talk about? What are we going to write about? Well, there's plenty to write about and talk about. Good morning to you. What do you think about this potential plan?
Well, I think that the two sides have unfortunately gone back to negotiating through the public, and that's not a way to get things done. It's not a way to build fan support. It's not a good way to do anything, but for whatever reason, they've decided to start down that route. And they probably, if you look at the calendar, based on the dates of, you know, getting together in mid-June to ramp up again and start play in early January and in early July, they probably have maybe 3 weeks at most to sit down across the table and, you know, hammer this out like they need to do.
I've been saying since this came out, this is only day one, and both sides are digging in to an extent through the media of what you're hearing, whether it's Tony Clark, the head of the PA, or this presentation floated out by Major League Baseball. And to your point, it's only day one. They got an agreement earlier this year done in about 2 weeks. So to your point, if you're going to get this schedule in, the 82 games have a three-week spring training or so. You got about a two and a half week period. So it's day one, kind of cool the Jets. You got to think that cooler heads would prevail if they got inside a room and try to hammer something out.
That's right. And the initial media reports from this meeting that was held yesterday on Tuesday is that, in fact, MLB did not even bring up money, but they spent the first meeting talking about what everybody said was the first priority, which is health and safety. And if that's what happened, that's great. Because I probably MLB realized, you know, the pushback that they got, they didn't want to cause a confrontation from the, and I'm just speculating here, you know, they didn't want to cause a big confrontation, you know, the first time they're sitting down to work this through. So, you know, if in fact those reports are right and they really did talk about those issues which are concerning the players, a number of the players, which is, hey, how can we come back in a, you know, in a safe, healthy way, then I think that's a big positive and, you know, maybe bodes well for, you know, the fact that they're going to be able to sit down and work this out.
Let's just say for argument's sake that this year is an outlier. Do you see the players allowing a cap or a revenue share of 50-50 in this situation?
Well, it's tough right now, Dan, because revenue sharing is not something that the owners had any interest in when times were good. And now, you know, times are tough. Nobody can argue about that. And so the players are saying, wait a minute, you want me to give back now, but, you know, when you were making the billions of dollars before when things were good, you weren't. And it sort of then flows into, you know, what are the terms of the next cooperative bargaining agreement, you know, going to look like, because they're going to have to, you know, work that out in not too many months or they'll, you know, be a strike following the 2021 season. So, you know, there's a lot at play here, not just about what the terms are to come back this year, but concessions that are made or positions that are taken that are going to affect the next 5 years beyond that. And that can be a positive in a way, because if folks can, if they can look past this and say, okay, I'm going to give a little now, but you're going to give me a little more in 2021 or 2022, or, you know, whenever the revenue stream gets back to normal, maybe they, you know, by taking a long-term view, you know, each side can say, yeah, I have to give a little bit now, but when the gravy train's rolling again, you know, maybe we can, you know, share that in a way that both sides like better.
Court of public opinion, I've been saying that if the testing is there and if a player feels comfortable enough to go play and they say, yeah, I'm okay to be in that environment, but I'm not going to do it because of money, That's a bad thing in these times. What do you think about the court of public opinion and which way this is swaying for the players or the owners?
Well, I think the owners, you know, letting the details in, because, I mean, all the details of the proposal, you know, were really leaked out in advance. I mean, we knew, you know, when play was going to be. We knew how big the rosters were going to be. We knew what the playoffs were going to look like. I mean, you know, obviously that was, it appears at least, to be a trial balloon, and that wasn't a positive, I don't think. And, you know, it's really going to be a question of now whether they can backtrack and sit down and figure this out. But I will say, and I wrote about this yesterday, this issue of testing and what's going to happen if players don't want to come in and what's going to happen when there's a positive, you know, that really needs to be hammered out. And and again, if that's what they MLB discussed in the first meeting, great. Because those are the things that have to be hammered out. We're to the point now where we can't say, well, oh, they'll figure that out later, right? They'll sit down, they'll determine that later. They can't. Now we got a calendar. We got dates. They got to get plans in place that folks can start to rally around. And by the way, we don't know yet whether the local cities and the states are going to allow all 30 teams to play games in their stadiums. And if they don't, and teams have to play in Arizona and Florida, now all of a sudden, how can you have regional play when you've got teams half a continent away? So, you know, there's a lot of things that have to be worked out that we can no longer, in my opinion at least, we can no longer say, hey, we got to solve that later. They got to hammer that all out now. And, yeah, the money is part of that. The schedule is part of that. But it's not the only part of the equation.
No, and neither is a minor league season. You make a living off covering minor league baseball, and you do so well at thecardinalnation.com. And you see that this plan has got potentially the idea would be a taxi squad and 50 players for each team, not to be activated every night, but you could be able to pull potentially from the 50 players. Reading the tea leaves, what does this mean for the minor league season or minor league teams?
Well, I think it's just one more nail in the coffin. I, as we've discussed in recent weeks, Dan, you know, the odds of playing a minor league season all along didn't look good because the way that minor league teams make all their revenue is via tickets sold and concessions and, you know, all the game day revenue. And they don't have TV contracts. So you're not going to be able to play games in all these cities anyway because, you know, all the approvals won't be in place across all the 160 teams for minor league baseball. And therefore the minor league owners aren't going to make any money. Therefore, the only hope would be that if organizations are allowed to bring 150, 200 players together in their spring training complex and have some type of a camp, you know, an extended spring training camp, you know, that would be maybe the way that organizations could, you know, get in a year or a partial year of development for minor league players. But right now, even that's not known. And, you know, Major League Baseball could easily say, hey, we got 50 guys to choose from. That's more than enough to cover any injuries or any problems that occur. We're just going to bag minor league baseball and pick it up in 2021.
And
that could happen.
And the question would be then, how do you pay the guys that are on the taxi squad? If they're not on the 40-man and they don't have major league service, it's very, very interesting. You know, do you say, well, this guy is going to be activated for this game, so it's one day of service time, or are all the guys on the quote-unquote 40-man roster just expanded to 50 for 2020? I find that very interesting.
Yeah, and I, you know, given the austerity plan that the owners are on, I mean, we'll talk about this later, but, I mean, they made a decision to cut the draft back just to save $1 million per team. So, you know, they're watching every nickel and dime, obviously. So, you know, I can't believe that the owners are going to agree with any plan that allows expanded rosters where they're going to have to pay potentially twice as many guys as they would normally pay in a normal season, even on this extended, you know, the shortened schedule. So, yeah, I would guess they'll come up with some kind of plan that says, you know, you get paid to get service time when you're active. And probably the Players Association will give on that because the guys at the bottom end of the totem pole are the guys that always, you know, take one for the team, so to speak.
The draft, as you mentioned, it's now official. It's only going to be 5 rounds, and that is a huge difference as opposed to what we've seen in years past.
Well, yes, and it's even a huge difference, you know, between what Major League Baseball really wanted to do recently. Just like for the major leaguers, right, at the end of March, there was this decision made that supposedly agreed to not only how players would receive advances, the $170 million, but also how they would be paid if the season started. But the owners are saying, wait a minute, you know, for major leaguers, you know, that was assuming that we would be able to sell tickets and have people in the stands. Now we, the owners, you know, want to back off that, you know, prorated pay because we're not going to have that revenue from game day. On the draft side, Major League Baseball agreed, hey, we're going to cut from 20 rounds to either 10 or 5. And they agreed that spending would be $20,000 for all non-drafted free agents. Well, MLB came back to the pro and said, no, you know, we'd really only, we'll go 10 rounds, but for the 6th through 10th round guys, we want to cut that in half. And we only want to let you have 5 free agents at the $20,000, and everybody else only would get a $5,000 bonus. And the Players Association turned that down. So MLB was in a box where they had to go back to the, you know, the lesser of the two plans, which is 5 rounds only. So what that means is a 5-round draft means about 160 players will be drafted this year across the game compared to over 1,200 last year. Huge, huge impact on not only minor league baseball, but also on the amateur draft pool, whether they be high schoolers or college players. But, and the other side of the coin is, well, you know, if you're not going to have a minor league season anyway, you know, is it going to hurt as bad not bringing all these players in because they're not going to have anywhere to play?
The NCAA, a lot of talk about college football, and the trickle-down effect if you don't have college football is massive, especially when you're talking about the lower ends of the NCAA in terms of not SEC baseball, but other places that you're talking about that don't have the big-time players. Just your general thoughts of watching how the NCAA is handling what's going on in the fall, and then the trickle-down effect potentially with what's going on with baseball too.
Well, what we're seeing here in the fall is that now the California state system, which is 23 schools in California, made a decision, you know, we're not going to open up campuses in the fall. And so now the question is, you know, can you have collegiate sports, specifically, you know, Division I football, if you don't have students on campus? And that's an issue that's not resolved yet, but it doesn't look good. And it's just a reminder to us, you know, the challenges that baseball or any other professional sports has in trying to figure out how some way to get started even before September or in late August when football would go. In terms of baseball, I think as we talked before, a lot of high schoolers aren't going to sign this year if they're not in the first 3 rounds, because really rounds 4 and 5 this year are probably going to be guys where they sign below slot so they can free up money to pay a little extra to the early guys. So now even the 5-round draft might only be 3 rounds of the top players and a couple money-saving picks. So high school guys are going to look at junior colleges where they could be draft eligible again next year when things may go back to, say, 20 rounds. But the Division I, you know, there's only so many scholarships, and, you know, all these players got another year, which is great, right? All the juniors and seniors, they get another year of eligibility. But, you know, there's only so many seats on the bus. There's only so many scholarships to give around. And they cut those up already into little bitty pieces. So, you know, even Division I, there's going to be guys squeezed out. So there's going to be this, you know, this huge game of musical chairs. And, you know, some players are going to feel the pressure this year, no doubt.
I'm going to wrap it up with this. We know that the DH is coming. I mean, now it may, the days of a non-DH game could be over. We may have the DH, obviously, this year, and it just stays in for next year. They're high-paying jobs. A union would welcome that. Maybe younger fans would welcome that. That's the idea that I hear, is a lot of younger fans would rather see a DH in play anyway. As it pertains to the Cardinals, what do you think about the designated hitter in 2020? Where does that go?
You know, it's funny, you know, as you read, a lot of folks are writing about the designated hitter right now and analyzing rosters and saying, you know, who on each team would be the logical guys to be designated hitters. And every team could paint a positive story, because what major league team doesn't have guys that they're trying to get more at bats for? The challenge is, as we've seen in the past, not everybody has, you know, what it takes to be a designated hitter, that sitting around and, you know, only having those four or five plate appearances a night and being able to, you know, put a bad plate appearance behind you. It's sort of like a closer in a way. You know, you've got to be able to get back on the horse right away. But if you look at the Cardinals, to answer your question, I mean, you've got Dylan Carlson, we talked about last time, a guy who, you know, is on the cusp of being ready. And, you know, with 50 guys, it's, you know, it's almost fathomable to think that Dylan Carlson wouldn't be among the top 50 guys that the Cardinals would want to go to war with. But where do you get him at bats? Well, you got a designated hitter. You got Tommy Edman, who, you know, had a tremendous rookie season last year. Another guy who doesn't necessarily have a starting position every day, but a guy that, again, you know, you could stick at the top of your lineup, for example, and, you know, let him get on base and run. So I think every team could build a story that that the designated hitter will help, but I certainly don't think the Cardinals would be hurt by it. Now, I know, you know, the Adam Wainwrights of the world, they want a bat, and, you know, that's cool, but as you said, I think the fans have spoken. I mean, I haven't seen any surveys recently, but I would bet that if fans were asked, more folks would definitely say they'd like to see it than they wouldn't. And when you combine National League and American League teams in the same division or in the same, you know, schedule, you know, it almost has to happen.
TheCardinalNation.com, Brian, you're still putting out content every single day. What have you been working on?
Well, continuing on our minor league series where, you know, we've been talking about some of these health and safety issues. You know, we talked about some of the dynamics of fan perception of the players versus the owners. We ran a story where we're starting a new series analyzing the drafts over the last 10 years, but not by year, but round by round. And that becomes more relevant when we get to the 6th, 7th, 8th, you know, 9th, 10th round, the rounds that won't be in place this year. So, you know, all kinds of good news, good content available at the Cardinal Nation every day.
Great stuff, Brian. Thank you so much. We'll catch up next Wednesday. I appreciate you.
Talk to you, Dan.
Dan McLaughlin here to tell you about the hometown automotive family I trust the most, the Loof Hughes Automotive Network, and you know they are St. Louis. Loof Hughes has been a part of St. Louis for over 7 decades. They're proud to support St. Louis and the surrounding areas with cars, youth, sports, and charitable efforts. 14 brands, 10 locations. Just visit Fuse.com to start shopping today.
Loof Hughes, we are St. Louis.